keeping up with the Kick-Ass Canadians. I'm talking today with Sheila Rogers, host of CBC Radio's The Next Chapter, Officer of the Order of Canada, and Honorary Witness for the Truth and Reconciliation Commission of Canada. Sheila, welcome. Thank you so much for being here.
I'm so happy to talk to you, Amanda.
Well, I want to start by talking about your work towards truth and reconciliation. Among your many contributions, you co-edited Speaking My Truth, a collection of essays and reflections about residential school and reconciliation for the Aboriginal Healing Foundation, which was in 2012. And then earlier this year, you took part in a storytelling and reconciliation event at Royal St. George's College in Toronto. So I'm wondering if you can catch me up on your recent work towards truth and reconciliation and talk about how you think the process of sharing and telling stories is helping people heal.
That's a great question, and I really appreciate the opportunity. I think that when you boil this great big issue of truth and reconciliation down to its essence, what you're dealing with is the stories of individual people. And I think when people start to understand that this happened, that children were taken from their homes and put into schools where essentially they were going to have the culture ironed out of them, their own culture, their own language, their spirituality. That's just one part of it. The bigger part, I think, is that children were taken out of loving environments and places where they were cared for as individuals and respected as children. And not even a deliberate kind of respect. It was intuitive. It was like living and breathing. It's what parents feel for their children, just automatically, because it's in ourselves. And when you hear the stories of little 4-year-old and 5-year-old kids, some even younger than that, being taken away from their families, sometimes not seeing them even once over the course of a year, I think people begin to understand that this was a national tragedy. This was a national crime. And I don't think it is until it's distilled down to this level of one individual being taken away and then you putting yourself in that position and thinking, what would I feel if my child were taken from me? Or what if I had been that child? How would it have affected the rest of my life? You know, you walk, you were a little kid, you go into the school, you can't speak the language, you're not allowed to speak your own language. For me, it would be like landing on Mars or China and you know, at 5 years old, not understanding anything. And how, what kind of a risk we put these kids in. And by we, I say Canada, the government of Canada. And this is not unknown. But I don't think we understood exactly what was going on behind those school walls. So the stories that we chose for Speaking My Truth are personal stories, and many of them are about hope and resilience and forgiveness, and some of them aren't, because sometimes it is impossible to forgive what happened there. But I believe, and I really, the more I see this, I hear survivors telling their stories, giving their statements of what they went through in residential school. Not all bad, but believe me, just the very fact that they were taken away from their families is so bad, and that is really the first abuse. People say they feel lighter. People say, finally, you know, I got it off my chest. That's an expression we all use. And they do, they feel better. They have shared the burden, and those who are listening, those who are receiving the story, can help to carry the pain. And I think that's really important. I think that's really what a society is about, what a caring society is about, that we help people to carry their pain.
Yeah.
And with the event at Royal St. George College, that Richard Waugamese and Joseph Boyden were the two storytellers that I had invited to talk about storytelling as redemption. And in Joseph Boyden's book, 3-Day Road, one of the Cree snipers, Xavier, is actually brought to healing by hearing the story of his auntie, Niska, and her life and what it had been like. And then he tells his story, his flashbacks to the battlegrounds of World War One. And Richard Wagenese got very, very personal and talked about what his life had been like as a child of residential school students. And although he didn't go to residential school, his parents learned exactly how not to be parents, how not to raise children. And he was adopted, something like he was fostered out 16 times. Yeah. And there was a moment that was so incredible when I asked both Joseph and Richard what Northern Ontario meant to them, because both of them set their stories, their fictional stories, in Northern Ontario. And Richard just sort of looked at me, and I didn't know what was going to happen here, but then I realized he was on the verge of tears. And he said, Northern Ontario is what was taken away from me as a child. And it brought it home. It was a personal statement. And, you know, knowing that he didn't really have a home until he was an adult. And it was, in fact, Northern Ontario that brought him to a place where he could deal with his past and where he could heal. I think it's, when you come down to it, stories are all we have. In a way, it's very complicated when you look at government policy and the history of the Indian Act and how the Indian Act has made Aboriginal people wards of the state. The history of that is complex and it involves the law. But when you hear the stories of individuals, I don't think you can help but be moved as a human being.
Yeah. And I mean, you speak about sort of getting something off your chest, and that's what it brings in part to the people who are sharing the story. But what do you think or hope it will encourage the listeners to do?
Well, first of all, I hope that they will identify with them and they will be, in fact, witnesses as well. And I think when you know these stories, you can't unknow them. It is then something you carry with you. What you do with it is that's your own thing. I'm not saying anyone has to do anything. I don't think the sharing of stories is supposed to be prescriptive necessarily. But I think that when you begin to understand, so many times I've heard people say, I never knew this.
Yeah.
I never knew this happened in Canada. And with speaking my truth, I guess I've been to 10 book clubs now across the country where people are sitting in circles, whether it's in church basements or in people's living rooms, saying, I had no idea, because this was never covered in our history books. And until the apology 5 years ago almost, but most Canadians didn't have a very good idea of what happened.
Yeah.
So, and I think once you do have an idea, it's really up to the individual who hears the story, but I really believe that something's growing. And it's very grassroots. Yeah, and it's happening the same time as Idle No More. I think that people who didn't experience this are going and standing beside the people who did experience this. And if that's what they can offer, that's a lot. That's a lot. To just go and stand beside and say, I heard this story, and I'm here beside you as you carry on. I think that's so important.
Yeah. Well, Speaking My Truth is available. It's a free download. Is it through the Aboriginal Health Healing Foundation, or what's the URL to get that?
It's speakingmytruth.ca.
Okay.
And there's a new edition, which is a scholastic. Our very first edition print run of about 15,000 is completely gone now.
Yeah, I'll
and
have one of them.
I'm so glad you do.
Yeah.
And the second edition, which I believe is 25,000 or maybe even 35,000, I'm very bad with numbers, but it's meant to go into schools, and we've edited it somewhat. We've included all the church apologies and, of course, the apology on behalf of the Government of Canada. And so I think, in a sense, it because we end with the apologies, it points towards hope.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, an apology is, Tom King said to me, and he wrote the book, The Inconvenient Indian, apologies are cheap if there's no action attached,
yeah.
And I completely agree. The apology was just such a beautiful moment in our history, but I feel as though we've gone back from it. But I think it was viewed as the ending, as a closing, instead of an opening.
Really,
and
should be a first step.
Yeah, exactly,
yeah.
Exactly. So it's been a surprising book. I mean, it's not an easy read, as you know. It's not comforting. It's discomforting, and it's hard. And it's shocking in some places for many people. And it was not easy to put together either. But it's that little book has got some serious legs,
yeah.
If I can mix metaphors. And the book clubs, we're still being invited to book clubs across the country, which is amazing,
yeah,
a long time after its publication.
Yeah.
So as long as there's you know, the invitation, we still want to go. And it's, you know, Mike or I will go, Mike DeGagne, who's now the president of Nipissing University. So he's very, very busy.
Yeah.
And it's amazing also, the idea of book clubs. I am a stranger, although people listen to the radio, but still, they don't know me. I go into their homes, and I can't believe the feeling of welcome. But our idea to hit book clubs, I think, was a very good one, because people join book clubs because they want to talk about books, and they're engaged with books. And I think that people who are engaged with books are also engaged with larger issues in their country and as a society. And I think it was just such a good idea. Interestingly, of course, most book clubs are female.
Yeah.
And but there have been some church book clubs that have been men and women. And I think that, you know, that's important, too. I'm really thrilled that the next edition of the book will be going into schools, into high school and university.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
How does one go about booking you for a book club?
I think that what you do is there's a link on the Speaking My Truth book club site.
Okay.
I think what we've done, and I'm not the person who decides what book clubs we go to. I think that would just be too hard.
Yeah.
But if the argument is good enough, if the letter is engaged enough, then we try to get out to that book club. And we won't be able to do this forever because, as you know, the Aboriginal Healing Foundation is closing down. So I don't know the last dates the doors will be open, but it's not going to be more than a year, I don't think.
So they should act quickly if they want you to attend.
Yeah, that would be great. It would be great.
Well, there's something that I just wanted to close up with you and ask you about, and it actually ties in really beautiful to what you've just said, really beautifully. You, when I interviewed you for the Kick-Ass article, I didn't make it into the final article, but you gave me some beautiful insights about best lessons learned from Peter Zofsky, whom you hosted CBC's Morningside. Do you remember the two things, or do you want me to refresh your memory?
I'm pretty sure I remember what they are, and one of them was, when you're talking to your audience, you don't address them in the second person plural. Is that right? Is that
yeah,
one?
It's second person singular. And
yeah.
When you said it's about telling individual stories earlier when we were talking about Speaking My Truth, that really reminded me of that. You want to make a real connection with an individual.
Exactly. And I always think Peter used to say, suppose you're listening to me in the bathroom and I'm saying good morning, everyone. Really.
Yeah, it's a bit disconcerting.
And it really was, I think, just such a great lesson about one-on-one communication and connection. And I remember very well the other thing because I think about it all the time. And that was when the very first time I had to fill in for him, and I was absolutely petrified. I called him up at 10 o'clock the night before I was to go in very early and do my first edition of Morningside. And I said, I don't know what to do. What do I do? And he said, well, just listen. And I said, yeah, and then what? And he said, no, that's it. Just listen. And that's he was right. If we did a lot more active listening, to mix metaphors again, listening isn't a spectator sport. It's an active verb. And I think when you allow stories to go into you, you are changed.
Yeah.
And these stories in particular are very, very powerful and often just so inspiring and life affirming. And they're not easy stories to listen to, but I've been given this wonderful honor of being a witness to the work of the Truth and Reconciliation Commission, and I had a chance to say no, but I'm so glad I didn't, and I really believe this is a lifetime commitment.
Yeah, well, thank you so much for sharing the stories and getting the word out.
Well, I think another reason they asked me is because I have a big mouth, so that's just fine. But thank you, Amanda. It's a real pleasure to talk to you, and I always appreciate your thoughtful questions.
Oh, well, thank you so much. It was wonderful to catch up with you.